This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklyn's Radio.
Hello and welcome to Just Women, our weekly talk show on Brooklyn's Radio. I'm Sharon Finch and today I'll be chatting to two amazing local women with fascinating stories to tell. First up will be Caroline Cooper, who is an author, training consultant and the founder of Naturally Loyal, which specialises in employee engagement, customer retention and building brand loyalty. And then we have Elizabeth Quincy, also a writer, who has just published her first book, The Lyndhurst Affair, which is a historical romance. We can't wait to hear from them both, so without further ado, I'm delighted to welcome our first guest, Caroline Cooper. Hi Caroline, thanks for joining us today.
Delighted, thank you for asking me.
So normally we ask our guests for a bit of background information. How did you start out to become a writer and then a business advisor? So over to you.
Well, after a 25-year career in hospitality, I set out on my own and although initially had a break from hospitality, came back to it and really the first book I wrote with a colleague, and it was really about making our mark in the industry. And at the time, there wasn't anything else that was really pitched at small hotels and bed and breakfast. So was welcomed really with open arms, and it got to number one on Amazon for hotel marketing, which I was obviously delighted about. And once you've done one, it's a lot easier then writing your second one. And that actually the writing of the second one was the easiest bit. It was all the publishing and all the other things that went around afterwards that took the time.
Your first book is Hotel Success Handbook. So is that geared to all hotels or smaller to middle-sized hotels?
It was really pitched at small hotels, family-run, anything up to around 20 bedrooms, and bed and breakfast as well, because with a lot of bed and breakfast, they tend to run this more like a hobby. And if you run it successfully, if you run them well, then they can actually make a lot of money. So Lucy was the marketing side of it, and I focused on all the people side of it and all the interpersonal skills and building the relationships, both with suppliers and with guests, which is so important if you want to get repeat business.
And what when with your industry experience, what were the main pitfalls when you were staying at places and doing reviews and just analysing what they were offering?
Well, for me, my focus was always on the service and way people were treated. And when talking about the way people are treated, it's not just guests, but also their staff. Because in my experience, if your staff are miserable and they're treated badly, that inevitably has a knock-on effect on the customers. And that really is the premise of everything that I do now. It's focusing on employees, ensuring that they're well looked after. And if they're well looked after, then the chances are that customers are going to be well looked after as well.
It's quite a simple principle, but I spent 20 years in the civil service, and you'd think that everyone would know that if you treat your staff well, make them valued, that will you'll reap the benefits, the business will reap the benefits. But it just seems that if anything gets kind of either the chop or criticism, it's always the staff that get it in the first instance.
Well, I think half the problem in business is that so many businesses focus on, they have KPIs, and the KPIs or key performance indicators tend to be their margins and profitability. What they fail to look at is how looking after your customers, how that impacts on your profitability. And in some instances, they do monitor that. But there are very few businesses that actually monitor how engaged and how staff are looked after within those businesses. And that's where it starts.
I know that you hold a diploma in corporate and executive coaching and a certified NLP practitioner, CIPD graduate. No idea what that means.
Well, NLP practitioner is neuro-linguistic programming, which is the way in which we communicate, and there are certain patterns that people have, and I tend not to talk about it very much because for some people it's quite off-putting, and I think a lot of people are using things which are NLP principles without even realising that they're using it. So, for example, that capacity to build rapport with people, there are a lot of NLP principles which, if you could break it down, would actually explain what the process is and why some people are able to build rapport with one another, and with other people it just leaves you feeling a little bit cold. So that is an example, and that is obviously very key, both in terms of when you're dealing with your team and when you're dealing with customers.
Okay. And what was it that made you hankered to go back to the hospitality industry after leaving it?
I think that once you've been in the industry, it's sort of in your blood. And it's quite an incestuous business, but you're forever running across people in different walks of life who have worked in that industry or that I previously have worked with. And it's just a nice place to be. But what I also love, because now, having come from a hospitality, I now do a lot of work with leisure and tourism businesses, and they tend to attract similar types of people that I really enjoy working with, and I just love that environment.
When you go on holiday, can you switch off?
I can, mostly. Yes, yeah, there's a bit of me that is still looking to see how things are done, but yeah, in the main.
And your the new book that you've produced is called Creating Service Superstars. Could you just give us a little overview of what that's about?
Yes. Well, in my capacity as a trainer, people often come to me and say, oh, Caroline, we need to do some customer service training. Sadly, what they don't necessarily see, sometimes it is just that they need a little bit of a boost and a bit of a refresher. But quite often, it's there is something that is much more fundamental, that underlying, that is a problem in a business. And so creating service superstars is really all the other things that need to happen around the customer service training itself. Because customer service training, if you just do it as a tick box exercise, it isn't going to be successful. So what the book talks about is identifying, first of all, do you actually know what good service looks like? What's your whole ethos towards looking after your customers? It's thinking about the looking after your team aspect, which we've just mentioned, having the right systems and processes in place so that you haven't got somebody trying to do something and the system is really working against them. And yes, certainly you do still need to train your team, but that is just one element of the whole building a culture towards customer service.
And do people buy your book and then contact you, or word of mouth contact you and say, can you help, you know, something's not quite right in the business?
Partly that. I mean, the book is fairly new out, so it's still I wouldn't have said as yet there is a distinctive pattern, although people have got the book because at the end of each chapter there are some activities for people to do, so it becomes a very practical book rather than just having a lot of theory. And if they've got the book, then they can download the resources that then backs that up, and then that's a way then I know who's got the book, and then I can then make contact with them, or they can make contact with me with any questions that they have.
I've got a copy of the book here, and it looks very the presentation just looks quite, it doesn't overawe you with you know, with science, or you're thinking, oh, it looks a bit heavy. But I love the structure of it. You start each chapter with a quote. So on the first page, you've got Richard Branson: if you take care of your employees, they will take care of your customers. And then Maya Angelou, the introduction: I've learned that people will forget what you said, people will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel. So I think I really like the fact that it's appeals to, you know, your sensory nature as well as business brain kind of thing.
Well, talking about customer service and employee engagement, it is all about the emotions. So unless you are aware of the emotions that you're creating for people, it's going to be very, very difficult to create what you want and have the outcome that you want unless you're conscious of those things.
The ends of the chapters are, you've got action points, kind of a summary of what you've discussed. Did you do that because you just wanted the information to resonate?
I wanted it to be something that was practical. I also wanted it to resonate. It's a way of reinforcing the message. It means that if somebody's got the book and they've put it down for 6 months and then they think, oh, there's something in there, they can literally just go to the back of each chapter and there are some reminders for them. And different people will learn in different ways. Some people will be quite happy just sitting and reading a book. Other people need things to do. And on the back of this, actually, I know that some people like to listen, so I've also recorded a video program which will back up that. I haven't released it yet, but I'm going to be publishing that later in the year, which backs up all of the information that's in there.
What kind of feedback have you had from the books?
I was talking to a client. It's somebody who'd asked me for some help. I hadn't realised that when I spoke to him a couple of weeks ago that he was one of the first people who bought the Hotel Success Handbook, and he said, I followed it to the letter and it worked fantastically. Thank you so much. He then went on to say about his frustrations because they'd had problems recruiting for a fairly important team member. So he was helping out there and he was seeing all these other things happening around him that were frustrating him. So we actually then had a coaching session. And then when I spoke to him 3 weeks later, he said, I did everything that you said and it all absolutely worked. And he's now started to follow. He said, I've got the book. He said, I realise all the things that I've not been doing with the rest of my team, which means that if I'm not there, it all falls apart. And he said, the book is helping him to think about how he gets everything in place so that he can be out of the business for a couple of days and know that things the customers will still get the same level of service that they have when he's there.
And do bosses generally share this information or book or with their team and ask them to read it as well?
Several of my clients have said that they have actually shared it with their team because it helps to illustrate what it is that they are aiming for. And in fact, one of my clients said he read the first chapter and he said, oh, this is what I've been trying to explain for my team for so long, and therefore has been then said, this, you need to read this because this is what it really is all about, which is great. That's great to hear. The other thing that I know people like about it is it's actually fairly short, because anyone in business doesn't want to be sitting down in the evening and reading some weighty tome. So the intention was to keep it nice and short and sharp so that it actually gets read rather than sitting gathering dust on a shelf.
It's quite positive. One of the chapters is called Sparkling Performance, so it doesn't look like a training manual that, you know, you think you need 2 days to read Tricks of the Trade. Your website, or your company's called Naturally Loyal, was that an easy title to come up with?
No, it wasn't. Mm-hmm. And in fact, even this morning, I've had somebody on the phone wanting to talk to me about customer loyalty app. So, you know, a phone-based equivalent of a loyalty card. Mm-hmm. And, of course, that is not what I do. What my focus is on creating customers who feel naturally loyal to you rather than it being a big bribe, that because they know that they've been treated well and they want to come back. And employees who are loyal to you because they're treated well, they enjoy working there and are happy to do whatever you want to help make the business a success and keep your customers happy. So it's about natural loyalty rather than coercement, I guess, is the opposite end of the spectrum.
Obviously, there are lots of companies that have people that speak all different languages. Is that something that you've had to tackle before to help pass on a message if, you know, if English maybe isn't a first language? Or
It obviously is a fact of life when some of the training I do, English isn't the first language. However, in the businesses that I work in, their customers or their visitors, guests, whatever the situation, will be speaking in English. And so I have to sort of see it as part of their development that they will always speak to me in English. But I remember in one hotel I went to, and we did two sessions 3 weeks apart. And the first time I went, there were a couple of guys from Poland, and they were conversing in Polish. And one of them had actually only started there that week, and everything was effectively going through an interpreter. Went there 3 weeks later, and I could not believe it how, I mean, obviously he wasn't fluent, but how quickly he had built up his vocabulary, and the way that he was conversing in English was absolutely fantastic. Puts us Brits to shame.
Yeah, yes, us Brits abroad. how do you make your training sessions really appealing and not dry and stilted?
Well, I have a four-point philosophy in terms of training.
Hello, I'm going to write this down.
My firm principles. First and foremost, I think training has to be fun. When people are enjoying things, they're much more likely for the message to stick. And sometimes there is still a very serious message, but we can still have a little bit of fun around it as well. Second thing is the I, which is to involve people. And I think that we're all familiar with the chalk and talk type of sessions. The more activity, the more people can get involved, and recognising that people learn in different ways, or whether that's listening, whether that's doing, whether that's explaining things to other people. And of course, when it's interpersonal skills, everyone dreads the role play, but it is so important. But we can still do it in a fun way. That it's very relevant. So, for example, the client I've been with this morning, we've been talking about some very, very specific examples of things that they find difficult to handle, so that we can now weave that into the training and ensure that it's completely relevant for the team. And the M is that it's memorable, because you don't want something that people are going to forget the next day. And in a perfect world, of course, they won't only remember it a month down the line. They'll be remembering it a year or even 2 or 3 years down the track. And that's what I always aim to do, is they've got something. I use lots of acronyms and mnemonics and other memory aids, just so that the messages stick.
Have you come across a situation where, obviously, with the industry's 24 hours a day, where you've got a boss that's really eager, but they haven't actually got all of their staff in the training session because they're, you know, working at a hotel or a restaurant or whatever?
Yeah, it's one of the biggest challenges that we have. Is high staff turnover is a big issue, which means that actually for me, I prefer it when I can train people in-house, give them the training skills, and they can still get a qualification doing the training through me. And if they want me to, I write the training material for them to deliver in-house. And for me, that's a much more cost-effective way of them delivering the training. But it also means they've got complete ownership of the content, complete flexibility, and it makes their training budgets go a heck of a lot further as well. So it's a win-win, really, to do it that way. So the organisations that have people that have got... they may not have the skills yet, but at least they've got the capability to train others, and will have that respect from the rest of the team as well, which is also very important, is to train them up to do the training, which is what I love to do, and that's the area mainly that I go normally I go through.
Is it always a one-to-one personal training, or do you do virtual training, say if it's abroad or something?
I do virtual training. I have a client who's in Boston, Massachusetts, and we actually met for the first time 3 weeks ago in London, because she happened to be in London. But up until that point, we've been working together for 18 months. We've never met other than on Skype. So that's been one-to-one, written the training for them, and then been coaching her through delivering it. But most of the others are actually in the UK, so I'd actually be doing the training I mean, it makes it much more viable for a business if they've got 2 or 3, even 10 people that they need training.
Yeah.
It's a much more cost-effective way of doing it for them.
Right. Well, we'll be talking to you after the break. Just going to a quick ad break now, but we're talking to you more about your training and your book and your website. So don't go away.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklands Radio.
Do you need help with your Apple Mac, but you don't know where to go? Rafael is your local Apple certified support professional. He can help you with any of your Apple needs, such as setting up iCloud accounts and family sharing. Or perhaps you'd simply like to learn a few new things about your Apple Mac. Simply visit www.rafalkukla.com or call 07907 795000 today to arrange an on-site visit in the comfort of your home or office. That's 07907 795000 for peace of mind Apple support.
In Guildford and the County of Surrey, there's a wide range of things to see, do and enjoy. If you're looking for somewhere to eat, somewhere to stay, or somewhere to take the family, or perhaps you want to visit the countryside or indulge your passion for art, culture and heritage, explore bustling towns or take in a show, find a place that's romantic and peaceful. Whatever you're looking for, you'll be spoilt for choice. You'll find so many things to do. Visit Guildford.com is the place to go to plan your days and nights out. You can also book tickets, making us your one-stop shop. So go on, log on now to visitguildford.com. Great times are just a click away.
If you love film music of all kinds, then Hunter's Hollywood Hits and Britflix is the show for you. Every Thursday, escape into the exciting world of the movies with soundtracks that transport you right into the films. From special shows dedicated to legendary composers to theme shows dedicated to different genres, you can hear a mixture of classic themes as well as well-known songs that feature in films. So, all you film fans, be sure to catch Hunter's Hollywood Hits and Britflix with me, Suzanne Hunter, every Thursday at 9 p.m, only on Brooklands Radio.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklands Radio. Just Women is just what you need.
Welcome back to Just Women with me, Sharon Finch. Before the break, we were chatting to Caroline Cooper. Welcome back, Caroline.
Thank you.
So there's lots of different things that you do to help businesses. And we were just discussing in the break the importance of employee feedback. Could you just tell us why that's so important?
Quite often, if things are not absolutely 100% in a business, so maybe you've had higher than normal staff turnover, or maybe you've had more complaints, or just things are not working as they should be, talk to your team. Two reasons. One is quite often they will know exactly what's going wrong and can assist you in putting it right. But secondly, if you haven't got complete engagement from the team, then it doesn't matter how much money or effort you throw at other things, you're going to really struggle to bring that business around. So asking for feedback from employees is absolutely key about what they think about the job and what things can be done to make the job more enjoyable, and just generally to get them engaged and enthusiastic about their job.
I watch some reality TV shows. I won't mention the names, but there are some where they have teams, including teams of family members, which always... I know that it's staged, but always seems to go down like a lead balloon. Have you had any experience or difficulties with where there are family members that are, you know, the majority part of the team or part of the managing board?
One client I have where a mother and son, and the son is completely on the ball and up to speed with everything that needs doing, and when he's not there, mother interferes and effectively undoes all the hard work that he's put in, which is really frustrating for him. But bit by bit, he's working on his mother to get her to recognise that what he's doing is having a positive impact and what she's doing is having a negative impact.
Interesting. That kind of is what was the back of my mind when I was asking that question. And you must have had quite a few success stories, because basically you're troubleshooting and saving businesses or advising on saving businesses. Are there any that you can think of?
I can think of one. Actually, it's not a hospitality client, although they do work with hospitality businesses. And the very first visit that I had there, somebody came charging into the meeting with the client, and I was thinking, who on earth is this? By the second or third training session that we'd done, I was beginning to build up this picture of what exactly was going wrong. And it was all to do with this team leader who treated his team like 5-year-olds. And the other thing that came out from the work that I was doing there very early on were there were lots of things in that business that were not in place, but nobody had asked the team directly where things could be improved. We ended up with 3 flip charts full of ideas. And what was really gratifying is when I went back 3 weeks later, they had put into practice, they had resolved about 50% of those challenges, which just goes to show the importance of asking for feedback. When they first approached me, they had a customer rating of something like 3.4 or 3.5 out of 5. When I went back, it was 4.8.
Wow.
So that was really gratifying, actually, to know that I'd had a part in getting that right. Other places it's been, so a hotel that I'm working with, I've been working with all the heads of department there, and just little things like putting in place tools for them to do regular reviews with their team members, making their team members feel valued. And that's had a massive difference, not only on their staff turnover, but the productivity of each of their team members, and ultimately on the sanity of the heads of department as well, because they're actually getting some results now and they've had a really, really successful year. And I know that's not been completely down to me, but I know a large part of it has been down to the work that I've done there with the heads of department. So that, again, it's really rewarding when that happens.
In today's economic climate is part of the problem that funds are, you know, less and people are using services more, or does that not really come into it?
I think it does, but of course it's a bit of a vicious circle, because when budgets are tight, the first thing that usually gets thrown out is any training, staff training, and the second thing is marketing. Well, as any marketer would tell you, if you stop marketing, you don't feel the effects instantly, but then suddenly all that new business isn't coming in, you know, bit by bit the cracks start to appear. And it's the same with training. You don't feel the negative impact immediately, but 3 months or 6 months down the track, if you stop doing training bit by bit, the staff that have been trained either leave or they forget, and you're bringing new people in, and if they're not getting all the training that they should, then your business is doomed to fail.
Listening to you, it just occurs to me that you could do quite a lot in schools. Was that something you've ever done, want to do, or is it a bit of a difficult nut to crack, that one?
It isn't one, actually, to be honest, that I have looked at. Mm. I think that because I know the hospitality, leisure and tourism industry so well, I'm going to stick with the stuff that I know about.
And hopefully get a trip to Boston, because
there are worse places. Yeah, there are worse places to go, yeah.
Just briefly to go back to your book, Creating Service Superstars, how can people get hold of that?
They can get it on Amazon. So if they're in the UK, just a normal Amazon link and just type in Creating Service Superstars. Mm-hmm. Or they can go to my website, which is www.naturallyloyal.com, and then just follow a link to Amazon for that. And there are various other reports that I've written, and access to some of my tips booklets and links to various other articles that I've written for other periodicals.
Okay. We're nearly at the end of this part of the show. Is there anything that you'd like to do in the future? Any burning desires or that you'd like to share with us?
Or
secrets?
Well, I think most people who know me know that my passion is the outdoors and my garden. So if I could weave that in, one of the things that I do have, which I'm really lucky with, some of the locations that I get to train in. One of my biggest clients is, you know, it's all about the outdoors. So, you know, that's a real joy for me when I go and work in that environment.
I have seen a picture of your garden online. It looks amazing. Do you ever suggest kind of meditation in the garden for colleagues or for businesses?
I find that getting people out of their normal, even if it's just in a different environment, so going to somewhere that's a pleasant environment for training or coaching can make a massive difference to how people feel, and also that they feel safe being open and honest about issues and airing issues. So sometimes that might be a nice hotel somewhere, sometimes it might be out in some parkland or just walking and talking as you go.
That sounds great. I fancy that. Yes. Well, that's the end of this part of the show. Just remains to ask if you have any particular advice or information you'd like to share with the listeners as a kind of final parting.
I think for anyone who's in business, it's listen to your staff and listen to your customers.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And if anyone wants to get into contact with you via website or email, what's the best?
They can email me at caroline@naturallyloyal.com. or via LinkedIn, where I'm Caroline J. Cooper on LinkedIn, so you can find me that way as well.
Thanks so much, Caroline, for coming onto the show. It's been really interesting talking to you.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklands Radio.
Welcome back to Just Women with me, Sharon Finch. I'm now delighted to welcome to the show Elizabeth Quincy, a former businesswoman and now author. Welcome to the show, Elizabeth.
Thank you very much.
Could you start by giving us a bit of background information about yourself and what led you to the world of writing?
Oh, well, I have been a businesswoman for, I think, over 35 years. The last 25 of those was with Unilever. And I officially retired at the end of last year and then started to twiddle my thumbs and wonder what I was going to do next. I had written for pleasure over a number of years, and I had the bones of this story hanging around, so I decided to focus on it and craft it and then launch it, which is what I did in May.
Now, I'm quite fortunate that we both were part of the Claregate Writers Club, so
we were indeed.
So the birth of this book is in my brain. And I'm so thrilled that it's published now.
Thank you.
What was the driving force behind it?
Well, because of my age, I came from a family. I came from a working class family where people did read a lot. They never read the classics, but they always read popular fiction. And of course, I remember very clearly in the 60s that men and women read completely different books. So I grew up in a family where all the men read, you know, Ian Fleming and Dennis Wheatley, but all the women were reading people like Jean Plaidy or, you know, historical romances, and that's really all the women read. So I think I learnt to read on historical romances. So I have a great affection for that genre, and that's why I focused on it.
And the novel is called The Lyndhurst Affair, and it's a historical romance based in the Regency period. I'm just going to read out a bit about your plot, and then I think you're going to read the first chapter,
aren't you? So here
goes. When William FitzAlan, Earl of Lyndhurst, inherits his title in mysterious circumstances, he discovers that his legacy includes a remote Northumbrian castle. William sets out to take control of this new estate with his friend, Count Nicholas Andrassy, an opium-addicted Hungarian hussar. Goldsborough Castle holds many surprises, not least the wayward orphan daughter of the previous owner. Lady Angeline has secrets she must keep, especially from William, who she is convinced is not the gentleman he pretends to be. A brutal murder, rumours of pagan sacrifice puts everyone in their guard. Who can be trusted? William and Angeline are drawn into a whirlpool of intrigue and irresistible passion that threatens to destroy them both.
Dun, dun, dun.
Sorry, we haven't got the music for that. Do you want to read the first chapter?
Yes, I will. I'll just read the first page. The duo stared in awe at the vivid glow on the horizon. The scarlet-streaked sky resembled gashes of blood splattered against a vibrant blue canvas. Neither man had ever seen such a dramatic sunset, and the picture laid out before them would burn into their memories forever. As they rode on, dark towers rose from amongst the trees in the near distance. Eventually, a narrow, snake-like path guided them onwards, and the smell of cedar settling into the twilight was a warm invitation to come closer. On inspection, the vision was, at its heart, a Norman castle, richly ornamented and extended over the years. Stained glass windows twinkled in the dying light of the sun. Count Nicholas Andrassy whistled in appreciation. I do believe, dear friend, that we have just ridden into a Mrs. Radcliffe novel. The Romance of the Forest, perhaps. William FitzAlan, Earl of Lyndhurst, could not answer. His heart pounded in his eagerness to get closer. In his wildest dreams, he had never imagined such a magnificent sight. And to think that this was now his, despite the misdeeds that had led to this inheritance, its beauty overwhelmed him.
That is a the description is so powerful, and the gothic element just comes out of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did it take you, having, you know, dabbled with a bit of writing myself, did it take you ages to write that first page? Was that the hardest bit?
Yes, I think I must have rewritten it 10 times. And I think if you're not careful, and I suspect because it's my first novel, I am prone to that. I think, you know, if you can overwrite, and maybe that first page is a bit overwritten, but I promise you it gets better as it as it goes on.
There was a poll yesterday, a Wancom poll, which said that the most enjoyable reads for people are romance and suspense, and that definitely fits in with your book, doesn't it?
Did he really?
Yeah.
Wow.
What a coincidence.
Wow. Yes, how lucky
exactly.
is that?
Very lucky. And it's because it's a historical romance, you must have done quite a lot of research into that period. How long did it take you to do that?
Well, I did do some research. And, of course, research is relatively easy these days, you know, what with the internet. It's not, you know, you're not sitting for hours in the British Library anymore. But, of course, because I've grown up reading this genre. I was pretty comfortable with this period, so I felt like I knew quite a bit. I just had to refine that information, and of course, you know, we all add bits of our own sort of background and history to these stories. So, one of the reasons that William's foil is a Hungarian is because I was very lucky enough to live in Hungary for 3 years. I lived there working for Unilever, so I know a little bit about the Hungarian and the Hungarian psyche.
And has your job come into this? As you know, people that you've worked with, or anything that happens in your professional career, kind of seeps its way in.
Well, I once had a French boss who was called Antoine de Saint-Affrique.
Was he handsome? That sounds a handsome name.
I have to say. He was absolutely gorgeous. And it was such an exotic name. I did always say to him that when I if I write a novel with a gentleman villain, I'm going to use his name. So there is a villain in the book who's called Comte Lucien de Saint-Affrique. I didn't think I could use his whole name because he might sue me.
Well, we're going to have a quick ad break, and then I can't wait to get stuck into more about the book, so don't go away.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklands Radio.
Our relaunched shop and post office in Church Street, Weybridge has an improved retail offer, and we provide the vital services you need from your local post office. We have 20 foreign currencies on demand and the new simple and safe travel money card that's prepaid multiple currencies on one secure card. Plus, for the last 10 years, we've been number one for travel insurance, as recognised by the UK travel industry. And for tax-free savings, we have the Premier Cash ISA. So pop in and see us at 24 to 26 Church Street, Weybridge. We are open 7 days a week, including Sundays 10 till 2. The Post Office, Weybridge. Convenience on your doorstep.
Enjoy a day out at the Kempton Steam Museum and the Hampton and Kempton Waterworks Railway. The railway operates every Sunday, and dads get a free ride on Father's Day, the 18th. Both the railway and the triple expansion steam pumping engine of the Kempton Steam Museum are open and steaming on Saturday the 17th and Sunday the 18th of June. The Steam Museum and the railway are off Snaky Lane, Hanworth. Follow the signs to the Kempton Steam Museum. And find out more at kemptonsteam.org and hamptonkemptonrailway.org.uk. The magic of steam on your doorstep. Open every Sunday, 10:30 until 4, and don't forget Saturday the 17th of June.
I know how to avoid a soggy bottom. I know the name of cinema's most famous white shark. I know all the things you can do with a Maris Piper. And I definitely know the TV show that made this music famous. But I don't know my state pension.
There's a simple way to find out when you can get your state pension and how much it'll be. Search Your State Pension and get to know yours.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklands Radio. Just Women is just what you need.
Welcome back to the Just Women Show, where we've been talking to Elizabeth Quincy, who has just published her first novel, The Lyndhurst Affair. One of my burning questions was where you get inspiration for plot, characters, settings. I know that you mentioned previously that you've always liked this genre when you were younger, but where does the inspiration for the writing come from?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, it's just, I've got so many, it's like Disneyland in my head. You know, I mean, they're just always there. And I'm one of those people that talk to myself, you know. So if you ever see me wandering around Claygate, if you see a mad woman wandering around Claygate talking to herself, it's me. And my kids from a very young age have always said, "Well, Mummy, you're talking to the fairies again," you know. So I'm just always got these things in my head, and I have to kind of verbalise them to try and get some logic.
If I see you walking around mumbling, that's fine. If I see you dressed up as Minnie Mouse, I might have to stop and say something. Obviously, with being a businesswoman, your work day was quite structured. How do you manage to be self-disciplined enough to have written a book? What's your daily?
Well, you know, I actually think that, my granny always used to say, ask a busy person to do something. And actually, the fact that I worked and that the day was structured in some ways helped me because, you know, I would then come home from work and start writing. And I was very lucky because my husband was the main carer for the children and was the house husband. So I didn't have to do things like cooking or ironing when I came home. And actually, I enjoy the writing process so much that it was a great excitement for me to come home and think, oh, I can start writing now. And it wasn't a drain on me. It was actually an energy giver. So I found it relatively easy to come home from work and start writing because it really actually helped me relax.
And now that you're not working 9 to 5, it's or probably longer, has that affected your discipline? Have you got a structure now? Because I know that when it happened to me, my structure went completely downhill. I ended up watching daytime TV for about 5 hours.
No, actually, it's more difficult. Mm. It is more difficult because the day isn't so structured and there's always other things to do that distract you. So I find now the best thing to do is to get up and actually start writing straight away before I do anything else. And that way you don't get distracted. But, of course, it does mean then that you don't get around to doing the hoovering or the ironing.
The less interesting things. Have you got a special place where you could feel that you can write more than others?
We have a conservatory, and I really like writing in there because it looks out onto the garden and it looks out onto my roses. And so, again, it can be a bit of a distraction, but I really do like just to, you know, just to get my head up and to have a look around and see what's going on out in the garden. That works for me.
Do you carry notebooks around with you all the time in case you get inspiration from other places? Because I know you're thinking that this is going to be part of a trilogy, aren't you?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Have you started on the next one?
I have started on the next one. Yeah, I shouldn't carry a notebook. I don't. I do carry around scribbled bits of paper, though. So I've got a very large handbag, which has got all bits of paper. And sometimes I write something on a serviette. So, you know, the handbag needs to get sorted out every few days because there's always bits and pieces of scribbled paper.
And do you do things like mood boards or just to get, because obviously it's got a lot of rich gothic, dark gothic stuff. Did you ever do a mood board or pictures or?
Yeah, I did at the beginning do a mood board. But for me, the characters and the settings came really quickly. Mm. And so I kind of see set pieces in my head. I kind of see scenes play out in my head. And then the difficult thing is, of course, then trying to put that down on paper and actually describe to people what I'm actually seeing in my head.
Did you find it harder to do the plot or character development, or was it all kind of enmesh and you didn't really think about it?
I did find with the plot, even though you try to plan it out, you do find yourself going down a few dark alleyways, you know, and a few dead ends.
I'm sure some of your characters have as well.
And a few dead ends. And you have to start, you think, oh no, and you have to sort of track back and then rewrite it. So the whole novel has probably been rewritten in bits and pieces at least five times, I would have said.
How long did it take you, do you think, from start to finish?
From start to finish, about a, don't forget I was working full time as well, but about a year.
I'm just going to read out one of the reviews from Amazon, which describes a truly unique voice in this genre, fast paced and throbbing with menace, totally gripping from page one. That's pretty good, isn't it, for your first ever?
Well, that's you've just heard page one, so people will be able to decide whether it's gripping or not.
And you made a decision to self-publish. What was behind that?
I do know a couple of people who have published and gone through an agent, and they've actually been a bit disappointed with the marketing abilities of their agent, to be honest. But also the process of trying to find an agent, I got thoroughly bored with it because, you know, it's a full-time job. You have to send out to hundreds of them. You have to do your research on which genre they focus on, and then they all want the information in different formats. So I got very bored with that very quickly. So decided to self-publish and then might, you know, in the future look for a publicist. I thought that might be a better way forward as opposed to having an agent. And I did find a great publishing house. The man who owns it actually lives in Claygate.
It's meant to be.
It is. And it's called the Grosvenor House Publishing Company. And I really recommend them. And they were great, really helpful, really good customer service, actually. Yeah.
And it must be quite reassuring to have someone to work with you kind of on it. Did they proofread it or did you have to do that?
They did do a proofread. It's the author's choice about whether they do a proofread or not. Obviously, that's an extra charge. I think it's always a good idea to get someone to proofread because as the author you've read it so many times, you get to the stage where you can't see the wood for the trees and you just
or the commas
or the full stops.
And the cover has got quite gothic. How did you come up with the idea for the cover?
Actually, I chose the cover, my daughter and I chose the cover together, and again that was really straightforward. It was It was a photo that you can get off the internet, and then the publishing house do the rest. So we chose the cover, and we wrote the back blurb together. And so it was a mother-daughter thing to do. That was quite fun.
Oh, so yeah, something that she can be proud of as well. Mm. When you were writing, were there any surprises or twists and turns that you hadn't expected? Did it take you away that you didn't expect it to in any parts, or did you have a pretty good idea of mapping it out?
I think I had a pretty good idea mapping it out. I think the difficulty with me was trying to work out the pace of it, and I think that a thing that you have to remember, especially as a first-time author, is that because you know the plot in your head, your reader doesn't always know the plot. So I found that I had to go back on the story a few times to signpost better, mm-hmm. or to remind the reader what had gone on previously, which was the motivation for my character doing something. So that was something that I had to learn as I went through the process.
Did you read books of a similar genre at the same time or before, or is that a distracting thing to do?
I mean, I had read a number of them before. It is a genre. It's an easy read, and it's an entertaining read. So I'd read quite a few before, but then I sort of had to leave them and park them, and then just focus on this.
I have to say, when we discussed the book earlier on before it was published, it always struck me it was how filmic it was, and you reading that out, you can just see it as a film.
Yeah, I think it would make a great. There's a like a Poldark series or something, you know.
And how popular is that?
Exactly. Yeah. And exactly because of the way that I write, as I say, I actually kind of I'm very pictorial in my head, so I actually see the scenes playing out. So, yeah, I could see it as a series or a film.
So you're kind of right at being behind the camera in some ways when you're looking at the scenes.
Yeah, I think so.
And the trilogy, have you planned out the trilogy? How far are you with the next book?
So the next book is going to be The Hungarian Affair. It's going to be called The Hungarian Affair, and it focuses on Nicholas Andrássy, who is William's best friend, and what happens to him.
Excellent. Well, if you need anybody to carry bags to Hungary, we'll volunteer, won't we, Dave? Right, so we're nearly... I can't believe how quick that's gone, but... Is there any words of advice that you want to give our listeners about writing or following your passion?
Yeah, do you know what? You just have to take the bull by the horns and you just have to do it. And, of course, the problem with being a writer, and you will know this as well, Sharon, is that it's never perfect. And so there just comes a point where you have to let it go and just go, I'm just going to do it and I'm going to get it out there.
Excellent advice. I think I'll take that on board myself as well. And if anyone wants to buy the book, it's on Amazon and a Kindle version on Amazon as well.
On Amazon you can get the paperback or Kindle, but of course it's also on any other kind of online publishing outlet.
And if anyone wants to get in touch with you, website or email or by the station, what would you prefer?
Yes, there's in the book there's a website, but the email is elizabethquincyauthor.com.
Excellent. Well, good luck with the second one, and we'll speak to you when you've done the second one.
All right, my dear. Thank you so much. It's been fun. Thank you.
Well, I'd like to thank both of our guests today on Just Women. That's Caroline Cooper and Elizabeth Quincy. And huge thanks to my technical assistant, Dave Jamitas, who's been busy running the desk and smiling and raising his eyebrows at various junctures. If you'd like to come on our show or know someone who would like to come on the show, we'd like to hear from you. So please email us at justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk with the contact details and we'll get in touch with them. Or if you want to know more about the Just Women show, details of past guests and shows, which can be downloaded, are on the website, which is brooklandsradio.co.uk. And you can also find us on Facebook under Just Women at Brooklands Radio. If you're on our page, please remember to like us whilst you're there. So thanks for listening. Please join us again next week for Just Women. That's live at 1 p.m. on Tuesday, repeated 8 p.m. on Thursday. It's goodbye from me, Sharon Finch.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklands Radio. Just Women is just what you need.